Hey friends, you're tuning into Wisdom and Wellness with Wit, a podcast for your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, a space to learn and grow, to be encouraged and maybe even challenged just a little bit. Let's journey together and explore what it means to experience the wholeness God has for each of our lives. What's up, everybody? How you doing? I hope you are having a good start to your 4th of July weekend. If you'll notice, my voice sounds like trash. And listen, this morning I've been trying to do all those little warm-ups, and it's just not working. I got back from a 10-day tour where I was singing a lot, and then I got straight home to be with my little nuggets. And for some reason, when I'm with them, all I do is oh my gosh, I talk like this. Nobody asked me to. That's my gift to them. And so, so this is the voice we have today. And I hope it doesn't annoy you too much, because sometimes I actually like when I have a little sore throat. I feel like I have a little more depth to my voice and I can sing lower. Amen. I have to share an obsession of mine with you guys that I'm also affiliated with, and that is Organo King Coffee. Now, did you know that most coffee crops in the U.S. are very underregulated, and they contain some of the highest levels of mold and mycotoxins, which contribute to a whole host of health issues? Now, there's many reasons people don't drink coffee or they do drink coffee, and a lot of times it's for health. But most of those actually have to do with the quality sourcing of the coffee bean. GERD, acid reflux, a lot of times that has to do with how good or poor quality of coffee you're drinking. King Coffee is infused with the Ganoderma mushroom, which is one of the powerhouses of mushrooms. It is not even comparable to other mushroom coffees because of this bad sourcing practices that most companies only use the stem of the mushroom. As well, they mass produce, ignoring the needed development time for the mushrooms to produce. This immune-regulating coffee is beneficial for so many reasons. And I've noticed in myself, I don't have much morning bloat anymore. I don't belch as much anymore. Ask some of my friends, because when we go hiking or we're outside, I can belch the ABCs. And so that has really been improving. As well, I haven't been experiencing afternoon jitters or that afternoon crash that most people know about. This mushroom has countless benefits for hormonal health, and I use King Coffee in my enemas as well because it is heavily anti-parasitic. And I don't care what you've heard, we all have parasites. So the link to grab some of your Organo King Coffee is in the show notes. Disclaimer: this podcast episode is for educational and informational purposes only. This is not medical advice. I am not a medical doctor, psychiatrist, or therapist, nor am I trying to be. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for health and medical care that can be provided by your own physician, medical doctor, or mental health provider, nor is it intended to be used to diagnose or treat any condition. Always seek medical counsel relating to your specific health needs with any questions or concerns you may have, especially before starting any treatment plan, fitness regimen, adding supplements, changing or quitting medication, or making any lifestyle, mental health, or dietary changes. Any suggestion or recommendation mentioned on this podcast is to be taken at your own risk.
Well, this episode, I am coming to you as a triathlete. That's right. You heard me. I didn't make it up. I am a triathlete. And it's funny to me because the whole time we were training, all Dawn kept saying to us was, "You're going to be a triathlete." So I'm holding on to that. And today I actually wanted to talk about completing and training for a triathlete while being somebody who has struggled with chronic pain. And if you haven't already listened to, there's two episodes that I did in season one, episode 4 and episode 5. One is just me talking about the mind-body connection. Episode 5 is also really powerful. I talk with Eddie Lindenstein, who has his own podcast on the mind-body connection, which is, he is who I have learned so much through It is through him that I found my therapist, where I have found a ton of healing in chronic pain. And so I just wanted to continue this conversation because I grew up an athlete. I've talked about this all the time. I grew up an athlete, but then when a lot of stuff has gone down with my health, I just haven't really pushed myself in a long time in this way physically. I would still like work out when I felt decent. You know, I'd still like try to move, but nothing too intense and definitely nothing consistent for a long period of time. And so next week, actually, I'm going to have my girls, Dawn and Hillary, on, and we're going to talk about just some really important life lessons that we learned while training together as a team. It was cute all the time. We would do stuff and then Dawn would say, "That'll preach," because we really, really, really did learn a lot. And I think we will all find a lot of value in listening to that conversation, as well as what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about this angle from chronic pain, because I have found a major decrease in physical symptoms through understanding the role that my brain plays in pain. And so the reason I was really interested in doing this triathlon, I think there are a lot of reasons, and I'm still kind of learning. Like post-triathlon, you know, I'm getting a lot of insight about myself. But I think one of the reasons I did it was that I wanted to prove to myself that I can do hard things. And I think there's a lot of us out there. There are things that we find to be just unattainable and way too difficult. I found so many people, I talked about it a lot, and not because I was trying to like sound cool and impress people. I think it was just always on my mind when we started training. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm training for a triathlon. So I was talking about it all the time with people. And the most consistent response I would get is, oh my gosh, that is so hard. I could never do that. And I get that. Like, I feel that way about so many things. But it's just so interesting the way that we view things as being hard. And so that looks different for each one of us. But for me, I wanted to prove that I could do hard things. I also wanted to prove to myself that my body is so capable of doing what it used to do, you know, when I was an athlete and when I felt stronger, and that my body is really strong, and it's stronger than I ever thought possible. And so I think that I romanticized this process a lot before we started. I knew it was going to be tough, but I also thought I was going to handle it pretty well. And boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong. And so again, I'm sharing this journey, my process in this journey, because I think there's a lot of things you might see in yourself. And so I'm just hoping maybe it can highlight and just open up some things for you as we're all kind of venturing into things that God's calling us into, whether it be, you know, career, whether it be the way that we engage with others and love on those around us, and the way that we just challenge ourselves. So there were some things I knew about myself kind of heading into this whole, I think it was about a 6-month journey. Number one, I knew I could accomplish this goal, but I was really scared that something was going to happen with my body that was going to stop me from finishing. So like in the past, I've always made these physical goals, right? I've talked about it before. I just always wanted to be really fit and skinny and thin and be in shape. And so I always came up with these goals. And I would be consistent for a little bit, but then I would get sick again and just be unable to finish. And then once I was kind of out of it, I wouldn't get back into it. So I knew that about myself. Secondly, I've never figured out a good rhythm of what it means to push myself too hard and then what's a good challenge. So I knew that I was going to encounter physical pain. It's normal physical pain, right, when you're training for something. But then also having my background and just having the fears I already had about how my body was going to respond, I knew I was going to need to figure out when to rest and when to push. So that was definitely like a hesitancy I had going into it. So there were definitely times where I started to feel my body responding to what we were doing in a painful way. And so, you know, different examples, when we would go cycling, my knees would start to kill. I would also get a lot of like wrist pain. I would get neck pain. My feet started killing, you know, from running and cycling. Of course, my shoulders started to hurt from all the swimming. And so what I've worked a lot on with my therapist is stressing about the workload, which makes me sick, rather than the workload itself. When we stress about how much we have to do, all we're doing is telling our body that the thing we're about to do is dangerous, it's hard. It's almost like we're predicting or prophesying, if you will, that the task at hand is going to be harmful. And so I think by just kind of speaking that over myself, there were times when it just came true. And then also, I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to do well. I'm an athlete, so I have to do well. I'm a swimmer. I better kill it. And wouldn't you know it, the swim was the worst event in the race that I did. And I'll talk about that as we go. But there was so much pressure that I was putting on myself to do this well. I wasn't doing it to have fun, you know, all of those kind of things. I was like, I'm an athlete. This was my event growing up. We about to kill it. And so the first few months, I found myself enjoying it mostly. And enjoying it is a strong word, but I think I found value in what we were doing. And I was appreciating the increase in stamina and strength I was feeling. The girls will definitely tell you I did not have a great attitude all the time. But it was mostly an encouraging challenge. I knew there were times I just hated it, but I was like, this is what we got to do. And then about a month out from the triathlon, I hit this huge wall. And this is where I feel a lot of us can just gain some value from this journey that I've been on. I felt horrible. Like, I felt like I was kind of relapsing and going back to where I started. I was always exhausted. I began to become in incredible pain again. And it just was really freaking me out. I was getting these flashbacks of staying in bed for days and not having energy to do anything. I was canceling things left and right. I was feeling like even 12 hours of sleep wasn't even close to enough. And it was really scary. And at first, I couldn't really figure out what was happening because I had been doing like, you know, almost 4 months of this and pushing myself. And then I began to lean into what I had been learning this whole time about the brain and the body. And I realized that there were some circumstances happening outside of the training that were really stressing me out and making me really mad and really sad and scared and just uncomfortable. And so once I was able to make the connection, it literally all made sense to me. And here's where I had to be really honest with myself. And so I kind of just started digging. I made an appointment with my therapist again. And I noticed much of my sense of safety was off. My stability, my fear of finances was kind of kicking in, and how I felt about relationships, maybe losing relationships. And all that stuff was just kind of settling in. And so you might ask, well, why does that have anything to do with knee pain? You're on a bicycle. It makes sense that your knee would hurt. And that, my friends, is the beauty as well as the sneakiness of the mind-body process, or what we've talked about before as tension myositis syndrome, TMS. And so there's a well-known voice in the mind-body community that says sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our body. And so I want to circle back to just a brief definition of tension myositis syndrome, or the mind-body syndrome. Again, for a more in-depth conversation, check out season 1, episodes 4 and 5. But a definition of TMS is that it is a psychogenic and psychosomatic disorder. And so psychogenic simply means a physical condition, such as pain, that originates in your brain or is changed by your brain to serve a psychological purpose. So it appears to be physical, but the real cause is psychosocial. Psychosomatic is a subcategory of psychogenic, and it indicates that there is an actual physical change that is taking place. And the physical change occurs in our muscles, our nerves, our tendons, all throughout our body. So it starts out psychological and then turns physical. TMS serves as this defense mechanism. The sole purpose of TMS is for your brain and your nervous system, and even more specifically, your unconscious mind, to divert your attention from what your unconscious mind considers to be unbearable or unsafe emotions. And it turns it to more acceptable physical issues. Anger and rage are the most common repressed emotions that result in pain. So emotions that the brain and nervous system deem as dangerous, anger, rage, fear, sadness, shame, guilt, you name it. So for me, I was experiencing an intense amount of rage. I was also angry that I had committed to this. I was really angry that I was tired. I was really angry I didn't feel more in shape. I kept telling them, like, it feels like the more we go and then the harder we push, the more I'm still out of shape. And that was just really frustrating me. And then I was angry about just a lot of other things going on in my life. So what was my brain trying to do? It was sending signals of pain to different parts of my body to try to get me to stop doing what seemed so unsafe. The pain often originates in areas that will actually make us stop. So think about it. Take a second. Think about either chronic pain or just maybe some pain that you've struggled with. Maybe you're a golfer and you felt that tweak as you hit the ball and you're now in constant pain. That would make you stop golfing. Or same as if you were, you know, a baseball player or you hit the ball. Say you're a lifter and you might feel your back go out or your shoulder tweak, you know, as you were doing one of your exercises. That'll make you stop lifting. The point is that your brain is punishing you. It's not punishing you, but rather it's keeping you safe from doing things. It's not the actual physical movement that's causing the pain, but it's the message being sent to the area from your brain. Now, of course, if you're doing some heavy lifting and you actually tear a ligament or whatever, there's going to be a certain amount of time that your body needs to recover. But then after that amount of time, the body is designed to heal. And so often mind-body therapists and psychologists give the amount of recovery time as a normal amount, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And then after that, when pain becomes chronic, there is so much information and science showing that chronic pain really is a result of the mind-body connection. It is not made up pain. It is not just, oh, it's all in your head. It's not that. It's this psychophysical, it starts out psychological and it turns into structural physical pain. So there were moments when we were cycling and I would all of a sudden feel these really sharp pains in my knee. And on an off day, if it was really frustrating to me, and there were times that happened often, there were a few times that I cut the ride short because the pain was just too much. There were other times where I would feel those sharp pains and I would decide not to care about it. It was kind of like this whatever mentality. And then I'd realize 5 to 10 minutes later, the pain was completely gone. And you might be like, how can that be? How does that make sense? Well, sometimes we become, understandably, so preoccupied with our pain that it's all we think about. And it makes sense, right? We view the pain as dangerous. And so now we're freaked out and whatever we're doing is going to make it worse, right? So your knee starts to hurt and you're like, oh my gosh, if I keep going, this is going to be worse. What if I tore something? What if I, you know, fractured something? What if there's something wrong with my knee? All of that. That's completely normal. But the danger levels increase and our brain continues to send these strong messages of unsafety. It's this unhelpful cycle of fear and pain. So the more we fear, the pain and give it attention, the pain increases. And the more the pain increases, we then increase our fear and we give it even more attention. So when I was able to put into this, into practice this whatever mentality, what I was telling my brain is, this is safe. This pain is not needed. We are safe. I don't need it. I would then notice my wrists start to hurt, or my shin, or my neck, or my hips. And all of these areas have been hit hard in the past with my fibromyalgia and arthritis flares. So when my brain knew that my knee wasn't stopping me, it would send pain to my knee and I'd say, nah, fam, I'm good. This isn't scary. It would then send a message to another area that would try to stop me again. And again, it's doing all of this because my brain is wanting me to stop because it wants me to be safe. For me, with all the pain I've gone through, safety is home in bed. Like, that is where my brain deems me safe. And so it's going to do whatever it can do to get me back to that place. So for me, it has just been this continual practice of not letting the sensation scare me or bother me. So when I would go into a ride and I was already really tired, or I was just in this really bad mental or emotional state, I wasn't really able to have that same whatever mentality. And that's okay. And that's when I would end up cutting my ride short. I was just like, I don't have it today. And that's totally fine. There was nothing for me to prove, right? It was just like, you know what? I don't have it in me today. So I'm going to cut it short. And thankfully, the girls were so supportive and they understood a lot of what I've been going through. And so that was also helpful. The purpose isn't to get it right 100% of the time. It's to learn and to grow and uncouple this fear cycle that has been so deeply ingrained. Dan Ratner, who is a TMS psychologist that I love and I've taken one of his courses, he says that we can view pain as moment to moment. It means that in every moment we have this ability to be pain-free. So he doesn't believe in using the term chronic. He uses acutely consistent, because at any moment the pain can be gone. And language is really, really powerful, right? We all know that our words create our worlds. Our words give a lot of meaning to things. So I love this because I am a living testimony to this truth. If you are someone who has had years of chronic back pain, there is no reason that you can find healing in the coming months, weeks, or even days. It is moment to moment. I even found this with my fatigue, even depression, anxiety. You know, I would have a relatively low production week where I didn't have a ton that I had to do, but would be exhausted. And then in a really packed week, I could find myself energized. And it's all how I was sending messages to my brain to interpret it all. And of course, I have gone through this journey with an incredible mind-body chronic pain-specific therapist. She's been amazing. Do you need one to really navigate this journey? No. There are so many resources, and I think I'm trying to be a resource for those of you as well, but there's so many resources, and I'll tag them in the show notes, of people that have found incredible healing. I mean, crushed spinal cords, L3, L4, crushed, told you can never have a baby, you can never walk again, has found complete and total pain relief, but the L3, L4 is still crushed, right? Like, people just getting out of lifelong bed-bounding chronic pain situations and learning this connection with the mind-body and becoming completely pain-free. Okay, so we head into the week of the triathlon. And I had quite a few commitments the week leading up to it. I had some gigs and just a lot of things I had to get done. And I found myself really stressed. The fears were popping up. What if I don't get enough sleep before? What if I get sick before this happens? What if my body just feels horrible and I'm just stuck doing this thing I really don't want to do? You know, all these what ifs that were communicating to my brain that the event coming up this weekend is really dangerous. I was really struggling. And again, I had decided to book an appointment with my therapist because I was treating this whole thing as this bad, horrible event happening to me rather than this opportunity to find some growth in a challenge, which was my initial reason for doing this. And I just, the way that I navigated it mentally the whole time is, on this end of it, kind of humorous to me. Once we got to Utah, which is where we were doing the triathlon, I noticed even the altitude was what messing with me. We walked up 3 flights of stairs to get to our Airbnb, and I was out of breath. And so all that did was add on to this heaping pile of fear that this is going to be scary and bad. And we've been doing lots of hiking, and we've had way higher levels of altitude than in Utah. And I wouldn't feel a thing, not a thing, not even slightly dizzy or anything. But again, my brain was learning that if it couldn't get me with these other physical sensations, all right, let's try altitude. Again, it was trying to keep me safe. And I keep repeating myself to really try to hammer in this point. Maybe you have chronic back pain. There's most likely things that are deemed bad to do, right? Sitting too long, bending over, sleeping the wrong way, all of this is going to just put you back in horrible pain. But all this is doing is telling your brain to continue to send these messages of danger. Studies have found that most people that have structural abnormalities in their spines have zero pain. Why? If someone with a crushed vertebrae or a slipped disc has no pain, what's the reason that others do? And so neuroscience and mind-body psychology will tell you it's all in the signals the brain is receiving as danger from the unconscious mind. Powerful stuff. Powerful, powerful stuff. But I know it's hard to kind of wrap your brain around. So if you're not really on board yet, that's totally fine. I think for a minute I was trying to convince myself, and I'm fully convinced. So, you know, that's all I need. But I found so much healing, and there's just, man, there's so much more to learn. The day before the try, we decided to go check out the course and see the lake and kind of prep ourselves. And because I grew up a swimmer, I had tried a wetsuit when we did a swim in the ocean, and I just hated it. I didn't like it. It just made me feel really like I couldn't breathe, not having it. We jump in the lake, and boy, did I realize I made the wrong decision. The day that we did the triathlon, the lake was 57 degrees. It was freezing. I mean, freezing. And you know, what's also funny is I grew up loving jumping into cold bodies of water. Like, that was a thing that me and my cousins always did. I've done a ton of cryotherapy and cold plunges. Like, I really had no problem with cold water. But this freezing lake turned on the greatest danger signal in my mind thus far. I mean, whoo, it is all I could think about. That night, I couldn't sleep. I was obsessed over the fact that I was about to swim in this frozen lake. And I was really scared, like really, really scared. And so the morning we wake up around 5 a.m. and we head to the race, I am just nervous. And I'm like, nah, I'm not doing this. Like in my head, I'm like, nah, we're not doing this. There's no way. We do a little pre-jump into the lake to get our bodies accustomed to the temperature. And when I tell you, I was one of 4 people who didn't have wetsuits on. There were men and women who looked incredibly fit. You could tell they were just like top tier athletes. They've done Ironman and plenty of races harder than what we were doing that day. And they even had sweatsuits on. So my fear is just being justified as people are telling me, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing this. You're my hero. I could never do this. All of these things that are just making me feel like an idiot, right? And so me and Hillary jump in the water really quickly, you know, just to feel it. We get out and I just look at her and I said, I quit. I'm not doing this. My brain and nervous system were on overload and they were doing whatever they could to get me to back out. And I was really, really, really going to give in. And the girls were so supportive and were encouraging me to do it. And so I did it. I jump in after they tell us to, and immediately I couldn't breathe. I couldn't see. I was nauseous. I was frozen. I was terrified. I thought I was going to drown. And I'll remind you, I was a CIF winning qualifying swimmer. I played water polo, where you're getting swam over and drowned by the other girls as you're sprinting across the pool. I've swam across lakes before, freezing cold lakes before. This isn't the first time. But it's this lake where I felt the most life-threatening fear I had felt. I mean, I want to say ever, but I know I've had other terrifying moments in my life. I had to turn on my back and just kind of try and catch my breath. I could not catch my breath. And so I realized at that point, my brain was, it was winning. It was going to win. And so I shortened my distance from what I had originally planned, and I did a shorter distance race. And that was really hard to decide, and I'm still bummed about it. But when I got out of the water, I was nauseous. I couldn't even walk straight. I mean, I felt so defeated. What I had assumed would be my best part of the race was the very first thing that took me out. And it was interesting because while we were training, and I know that a pool is so different than a lake, I mean, I was swimming the fastest time of the mile I'd ever swam. I was a sprinter in high school. I was never a long distance swimmer. So I was feeling really confident in myself. Like, I'm doing good. I'm pushing myself. I'm feeling good. No, nothing. I got dressed. I decided I was done with the race. And so we'll get into that more when I talk next week with the girls. I did end up finishing and I did the whole race, but let me tell you, it was quite the adventure. And so I wanted to share all this because I was so intrigued at how my brain processed everything going on. It was funny because when I talked with my therapist and I was just telling her everything I was thinking and saying to myself, she was like, it sounds like you've already physically and mentally, it sounds like you've already done a triathlon before you've even done a triathlon. I was like, oh my gosh, you're so right. Like, I've really made this a really big deal. And I've done harder things than this triathlon. Being a competitive swimmer and water polo player, like, I've done really hard things, but I've never attached the same kind of meaning to something as I did this race. And I even told my therapist beforehand, I was thinking of quitting. And she very, very attunely noticed that it was all fear-based. And she said, I don't normally encourage my patients on what to do or not. She's like, but I really want to encourage you to do this. I think you're going to be really happy when you do. I would have never finished this goal without the girls doing it with me and encouraging me, which is also something we're going to talk about, doing things in safe community. It was the game changer for me. But I wanted to try to share what happened in my brain and nervous system and body while training for this physical challenge with this history of chronic pain. There were times when I just didn't have it. And for my brain to feel safe, I would skip a workout. And then there were times I was able to learn to interpret these challenges in a new way. You know, physical things scare me because in the past I meant pain and sickness. And I'm learning that I can do hard things and teach my brain that these things are not dangerous. It's not easy. And again, I've been working on it with my therapist. I have so much to learn, but I really want to encourage you, if you struggle with any sort of chronic pain, anxiety, arthritis, anything physically that has been lasting for longer than it should, there is so much evidence to support the fact that your brain and nervous system have a very big role to play in all of it. Again, it's not that you've made up the pain. It's not that it's in your head. It is actually very, very scientific and very physiological. I've seen my own body do some incredible things. And who knows, maybe a triathlon was a bit too aggressive, you know, for me at this time. Or maybe it was just what I needed to see the areas I have the greatest work to do in. Regardless, I'm thankful for my body and I'm learning to see it as the very thing that loves and protects me rather than the thing that is keeping me from living the life I want to give. I want to live. And I want to speak that over you as well, that your body is not a prison. your body is not some death sentence or some horrible life existence. It is designed to heal. It is designed to thrive. And maybe up until now, you just haven't had the tools to figure out how to do that. And I really, 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 really pray that I can be somebody that can help ignite this new fuel in you. That pain, maybe it's been your past, but it's making me emotional. Pain is not your future. And there is so much freedom in learning how our bodies really function and learning the ways that God created us to live. And so I love you. I hope you have such a fun and great 4th of July weekend. Be safe, and I'll see you guys next week.
Like what you hear so far? Click the subscribe button and give me a rating and review. And let's keep this conversation going. You can find me on social media at Whitney Wood Music. You can find any of my latest singles out anywhere that you stream or purchase music under Whitney Wood, as well as my latest passion project. It's a kids EP called BB and Bubba. I'll have the links below so you can find them. Have a great week, everybody.